This is Barbara Ridenour returning with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated April 1st, 2015. We'll continue with the obituaries. Gary Lee Allen, 64, of Decatur, died February 18th, 2016. Services to celebrate his life will be held at a later date. The family is being served by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home of Decatur. Helen A. Beals, 91, of Decatur, died Tuesday, March 29, 2016. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Monday, April 4th, at Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur, with visitation 1 hour prior to services at the funeral home. Burial will be at 1 p.m. Monday in Camp Butler National Cemetery, Riverton, Illinois. Memorials may be made to a charity of the donor's choice. Robert E. Darst, 82, of Decatur, died Monday, March 28, 2016. Private interment services will be held at a later date. McCracken Dean Funeral Home is assisting the family. Juanita Lou Buchanan, 73, of Decatur, died Tuesday, March 29, 2016. Graveside services will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, April 2nd, at Point Pleasant Cemetery, Long Creek. There will be no visitation. Tanzius Logan Funeral Service and Care is in charge of arrangements. Ronald L. Edgecombe, 65, of Decatur, died Wednesday, March 30, 2016. Memorial visitation to celebrate his life will be held from 3 to 5 p.m. on Sunday, April 3rd, at Dawson and Wyckoff North Chapel. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests memorial contributions to be directed to the American Heart Association or National Parkinson's Foundation. Now we'll turn to the opinion page and continue with letters to the editor. City officials' actions don't match words. On September 24, 2015, friends and family gathered in the Decatur Civic Center Council Chambers to observe the swearing-in ceremony of 11 new Decatur police officers. Then Decatur Police Chief Brad Sweeney led the ceremony and spoke to the eager young professionals about making good decisions based on law, policy, and procedure, and the strong morals that they possessed. Sweeney cautioned the new police officers to never make decisions based on anger, frustration, or disgust. He told the rookies to do what was right, and their new badges would always shine bright. I clearly remember City Council member Jerry Dawson speaking at the ceremony as well. He was speaking on behalf of Mayor Julie Moore Wolf, who had other priorities that day. Dawson told the new officers that there was a war on police. Dawson told the new police officers it was an advantage to be here in Decatur because not only Sweeney had their backs, but the City Council had their backs as well. He ensured the new police officers that they would never be thrown under the bus by the city manager or city council. It was only 4 months later that Dawson and the entire city council turned their backs on Sweeney, who spoke out against the city manager, who was abusing city resources and his authority. I pray he prevails in his current lawsuit against this injustice. Signed, Jessica Blunt, Decatur. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Thumbs up to Dennis School students who have raised money to help fund a Habitat for Humanity house in the West End. Dennis students want the house to be in the West End so the family's children can attend Dennis, said Simeon Risby, a seventh grader. Ideally, the recipient family would already be connected to Dennis, but interested families have to apply directly to Habitat and go through a process to be approved by Habitat's board. Dennis students have raised money throughout the school year to fund the project. It's amazing, isn't it? Dennis School Principal Matt Andrews said. Everything they've put together from concept to now is just absolutely fantastic. Thumbs up to Mowiqua for having the best tasting water in Illinois. Louis Louis Jordan has been submitting samples of Moequa's water to the Illinois Rural Water Association Conference for the Best Tasting Water Competition. On February 16th, he finally was able to claim the top prize. Jordan will represent Moequa and Illinois at the National Rural Water Association's Taste Test in February 2017 in Washington, D.C., in the hunt for national honors. Thumbs down to the continuing nonsense that seems to dominate the Republican race for the presidential nomination. Rather than get down to talking about issues, the main thrust seems to be personal attacks that add nothing to the conversation. The latest example is the argument that has broken out between Donald Trump and Ted Cruz over their wives and a back and forth over their physical appearance. With the way the campaign has with the way the campaign has been conducted, this development probably shouldn't be surprising. But even in an era when personal attacks rule, the shots at spouses is very unseemly. Thumbs up to Bob Fleeter for being willing to share his story with that emphasizes the importance of cancer screenings. Fleeter, a Mount Zion resident, was due for a colonoscopy when something else came up during a routine physical exam, prostate cancer. Fleeter, 58, wasn't shocked. There's a history of cancer in his family, as his dad had prostate cancer and died of lung cancer, while his mom is a 30-year survivor of intestinal cancer. Fleeter was having a CAT scan to look at his prostate when an abnormality in his lower abdomen turned out to be colon cancer. I'd always been an advocate for getting checkups and early detection, Fleeter, who is on the road to recovery, said. I should have done it a long time earlier. I'd planned on it, but I didn't. Then the prostate situation came up, became such a priority. Thumbs up to Eric Scrimpture, whose ability to pull Hondas apart, to understand them, especially when they don't work, has just earned him the honor of being the automaker's top master technician in the United States. Scrimpture, who works for Decatur's Bob Brady Honda dealership, won the national top tech competition, which the car company uses to test the mettle of people who service and fix its vehicles. Scrimpture spent so much time pulling his toys apart as a child to see how they worked. His mom once sought the advice of a psychiatrist. His obsessive quest for hidden knowledge, however, has turned out to be the perfect prescription for a career as a mechanic. Now we'll turn to the life page. Emma Urban Gardens, cultivating a landscaping legacy. Urban gardening project to help neighborhoods. Decatur. The late Emma Fuller might have left farming behind in 1964 when she moved from Brownsville, Tennessee, with her husband and 10 children in 1964 to start a new life in Decatur. But she never lost her passion for growing vegetables and flowers. Indeed, in 2012, the Decatur Historical and Architectural Sites Commission recognized the beautiful landscape she created the last two decades of her life at 1461 North Edward Street. Emma Fuller died August 17th. Besides keeping those gardens going to preserve her legacy, her family has joined forces with her church and the Greater Decatur Black Chamber of Commerce to begin a new project called Emma Urban Gardens. This is a good way to bring the community together, said her granddaughter, Tamara Fuller, who is the new chamber president. We hope it brings the feel of family back to how it used to be when you knew your neighbor and you talked to your neighbor and you worked with your neighbor. A groundbreaking ceremony 1 week ago at the first garden site at 455 West Packard Street featured an informal game of volleyball, just the kind of community activity organizers hope will grow out of the urban gardening. Tamara Fuller's aunt, Evangelist Brindle Hyres Fuller of God's House of Refuge, has just purchased the empty lot and hadn't decided what to do with it until her niece approached her with the project idea. My mom, Emma Fuller, was a member of God's House of Refuge, and this new garden is going to be directly across the street from her church, Brenda Fuller said. She prayed during the ceremony for God to bless the garden. Decatur City Councilman Pat McDaniel also shared his good wishes for the neighborhood to bloom again, and Decatur Township Supervisor Lisa Stanley pledged to provide volunteer help from recipients of township aid. Standing in front of a sign hand-painted by Rachel Wilson and a portrait of her grandmother, Tamara Fuller said she hopes the project will one day have many gardens managed by neighborhood groups, each producing food for needy families and homeless shelters. My grandmother was very special to me, so this is a very special event, my first as chamber president, she said. If she were here, she would love to see everyone having a good time. Now I'll read a little from the Decatur Tribune online. Paul Osborne's City Beat. Councilman Bill Faber will not be running for mayor next year. There's been a rumor circulating in the community that first-term city councilman Bill Faber is going to run for mayor during the next election. The rumor claim is that Faber wants more power in the decision-making process. I contacted Faber, and he quickly put the rumor to rest. He said, no, I'm not going to run for mayor. We're lucky to have Julie serving our city. Julie Moore Wolf was appointed mayor last year to replace the late mayor Mike McElroy after his sudden death. Moore Wolf was mayor pro tem at the time of McElroy's death and served as interim mayor until city council members selected her as mayor. Although McElroy was only a few months into a four-year term when he passed away, Moore Wolf will have to stand for election in 2017. If she decides to run for a two-year term to finish out McElroy's four-year term. It's too early to speculate on any person or persons who will be running for mayor next year, but I thought it was important to have Faber respond to the rumor since I had heard that he was going to run from several sources who must have heard it from each other. City Councilman Lisa Gregory still has a few council members, business leaders, and some members of the public trying to figure out exactly what to expect from her, even though she took office almost a year ago. I think her vote against rezoning for the new Aldi project months ago caught some by surprise, even though it made her a lot of friends with those living in the area. A few who supported the rezoning told me that they expected her to be more pro-business than her vote indicated. I met with Gregory a few times and found her to be very meticulous in assessing the issues coming before the council, as she discussed with me a list of her goals for the city, which were quite specific and well thought out. Some expressed concerns to me about her position at Richland Community College and if that would cause her to vote in a way that would avoid controversy. In a meeting I had with her during the Aldi rezoning controversy, Gregory told me that when she decided to run for council, she received the blessing of the then RCC president, Gail Saunders, to serve and make decisions that Gregory felt were the best for the community. I really don't detect her job at RCC playing a role in influencing her decisions. I believe she's trying to do what she feels needs to be done to move the council and the community in a positive direction. Besides the mayor's position, the city council seats of Jerry Dawson, Patrick McDaniel, and Chris Funk, who was appointed by the council to fill Julie Moore Wolf's council seat when she became mayor, will be up for election next year. Dawson told me on a couple of different occasions during the past year that he will not seek re-election. He will be finishing his second four-year term in 2017. He was very emphatic around it, even though I'm not sure that pressure will be applied to get him to run. I would be surprised if he changed his mind and sought re-election. McDaniel has indicated to me that he has not made a decision to run for another term, but I know Pat well enough to be surprised if he didn't run. Funk I barely knew since he was appointed by the council last year, but as I understand it, part of the criteria the council used to select Funk was that he would run for election in 2017, so I will assume that he made and will keep that commitment. So far, Funk has been a quiet member of the council, not seeking a lot of publicity, so his name is not as familiar to the public as someone who makes a lot of noise. The seventh member of the council is Dr. Dana Ray, and she is not up for re-election next year. I think she's been a solid member of council and proved to be a strong vote-getter when she ran for re-election last time. I also found her to be a likable person who takes her council position very seriously. Ray asks solid questions and shows a lot of wisdom in the conclusions she reaches on how she votes. I really didn't mention her in this column today because of any controversy, but I had mentioned the other six members, including the mayor, and wanted to include the entire council. There's been a lot happening at the council and city level during the last year with the hiring of a new city manager, the death of Mayor McElroy, and the appointments of Moore Wolf as mayor and Chris Funk as a new council member. There have also been a lot of issues for the council that is less experienced than the previous one. Longtime council members Larry Foster and Pat Legler did not run for re-election, and between them they had a lot of council and issues experience. This council, in my opinion, has not quite gelled yet, but I believe they will, and hopefully as a result of everything that has happened during the last year, they will come out stronger. Listen to the City Hall Insider Hour with Paul Osborne on Byers & Company at 7 o'clock every Thursday morning over News Talk 1340 WSOY. Visit our website at DecaturTribune.net and also find us at our Decatur Tribune Facebook page. Demolition work on bank buildings at Franklin and Main to start March 31st. Christy Fultz Incorporated will be working in the sidewalk at 125 North Franklin Street during demolition work for Busey Bank and First Tech began Thursday, March 31st. Weather permitting. This work will cause the total closure of the sidewalk at 125 North Franklin Street starting at 7 a.m. It started at 7 a.m. yesterday and will continue to approximately 5 p.m. Thursday, June 30th, 2016. Pedestrians are encouraged to seek an alternate route around the work zone. This closure will not affect traffic lanes. Greek Orthodox Church to host 55th Annual Stars Over Athens Festival, May 5th. And this is Osborne Online. Strike one stupid act off my bucket list. I've lived in the same house for the past 37 years, and during that time, I never had a second thought about climbing a ladder and going up on the second-story roof to caulk around the chimney every few years. It's actually a minor chore. I've always scampered up the ladder, climbed the rooftop to the chimney, enjoyed the aerial view of the neighborhood, and then returned to earth. Heights have never bothered me. About 30 years ago, I painted the entire house using some contraption that was somewhat like a scaffold. Note the word somewhat. I created my scaffolding from a few large plywood boxes that were in the garage and climbed up on them and started to paint. Several people in cars who passed on the road in front of my house waved at me as they drove by. Thinking back at how stupid and unsafe it was to trust my life on something I had created out of boxes, I now realize they were waving for me to come down before I killed myself. Well, it took me a while, but I painted the entire exterior of the house standing on plywood building blocks, and if I needed to go higher, I just added a box or two. Since it was decided that I was a high-risk painter, we decided to have aluminum siding replace the boards on, and my house painting and aerial balancing act ended, which is probably the reason I'm alive today to type this column. A couple of weeks ago, we noticed that an extremely heavy rain had caused a small leak in the chimney, and the weather forecast was for thunderstorms to start that afternoon and continue for the 3 or 4 days. Since I wouldn't be able to find a professional to repair the leak in a few hours, I had one choice to stop the leak before the rains came. So I asked my wife to climb up on the roof and fix the leak. Just joking. The choice was for me to get up on the roof, which seemed like no big deal. I stopped by Farm and Fleet to pick up some caulk and a caulking gun and headed home, quickly changed in some old clothes, I don't wear a suit and tie to climb on the roof, and headed for my adventure. I put the ladder on the garage so I could walk out on it, and then pulled myself up to the second-story roof. I got to the top of the ladder and decided that didn't look very safe, so I moved the ladder to another position, leaning against the house. I climbed to the top of the ladder and was ready to climb onto the roof, when for the first time in my life, climbing on the roof didn't seem like a good idea, and I paused for about 5 minutes while I decided if I really wanted to go ahead with this project. I thought, this is how some people my age get killed, by falling off their roof. Then I thought, I can do this one more time, and climbed onto the roof. When I got to the chimney on the second story of the house and looked at the neighborhood below, I seemed to be looking off the top of the citizens' building. Wow! I found the leak, gave it an extra dose of caulk, and started sliding down the roof towards the ladder. But I stopped in time. There's nothing like clawing shingles to stop yourself in time. When I climbed onto the ladder and my feet finally hit the ground, I thanked God for returning me to earth and asked for forgiveness for breaking the commandment of, Thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God with my roof climb. I pledged never again, but I did get the repair made before the afternoon rain, which never happened. In fact, it didn't rain for 2 weeks. I risked my life for nothing. Today, a professional from a local firm is putting new flashing on the chimney to take care of the problem. So that's something I don't have to think about ever again. From now on, the only person messing around with my chimney will be either a professional or Santa Claus. This was posted March 30th, 2016. News from here and there. Macon County final multiplier announced. Springfield. Macon County has been issued a final property assessment equalization factor of 1.0000, according to Constance Beard, Director of the Illinois Department of Revenue. The property assessment equalization factor, often called a multiplier, is the method used to achieve uniform property assessments among counties, as required by law. This equalization is particularly important because some of the state's 6,600 local taxing districts overlap into two or more counties. For example, school districts, junior college district, fire protection districts. If there were no equalization among the counties, substantial inequities among taxpayers with comparable properties would result. Under a law passed in 1975, property in Illinois should be assessed at 1/3 of its market value. Farm property is assessed differently, with farm, home sites, and dwellings subject to regular assessing and equalization procedures, but with farmland assessed at 1/3 of its agriculture economic value. Farmland is not subject to the state equalization factor. Assessments in Macon County are at 32.88% of market value, based on sales of properties in 2012, 2013, and 2014. The equalization factor currently being assigned for the 2015 taxes payable in 2016. They are being. Last year's equalization factor for the county was 1.0000. The final assessment equalization factor was issued after a public hearing on the tentative factor. The tentative factor issued in September 2015 was 1.0000. The equalization factor is determined annually for each county by comparing the price of individual properties sold over the past 3 years to the assessed value placed on those properties by the county supervisor of assessment / county assessor. If the 3-year average level of assessment is 1/3 of the market value, the equalization factor will be 1. If the average level of assessment is greater than 1/3 of the market value, the equalization factor will be less than 1. If the average level of assessment is less than 1/3 of the market value, the equalization factor will be greater than 1. The change in the equalization factor does not mean total property tax bills increase or decrease. Tax bills are determined by local taxing bodies when they request money each year to provide services to local citizens. If the amount requested by local taxing districts is not greater than the amount received in the previous year, then total property taxes will not increase, even if assessments increase. The assessed value of an individual property determines what portion of the tax burden a specific taxpayer will assume. That individual's portion of tax responsibility is not changed by the multiplier. Millikan University named top 20 small college to offer best deal for STEM degrees. Millikan University has been ranked among the 20 best deals on small colleges for STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math degrees by Great College Deals. The ranking was published on the organization's website in January. Millikan University was ranked 7th. The 20 best deals were selected and ranked based on total number of points. Points were awarded based on the following criteria: presence of a wide range of STEM degrees, advanced laboratory facilities, STEM-related internships, scholarship options, and any additional special features that added value for students beginning their STEM field career. Featured colleges scored the highest among schools with a maximum enrollment of 6,000 students and a net price of $32,000 or less. The National Center for Education Statistics College Navigator database was used to determine the net price. It's exciting to see Millikan recognized for excellence and opportunity in fields related to the natural sciences, applied sciences, mathematics, and technology, because these fields are so central to the evolution of the U.S. economy and continued leadership and innovation around the world, said Millikan Provost Dr. Jeffrey P. Aper. These are areas of particular strength and opportunity for students because of the quality of our faculty and their work with students in the laboratory, field settings, industry, and other locations where students engage in the full range of applications relevant to professional practice. In Millikan's College of Arts and Sciences, STEM academics are found in the departments of biology, chemistry, clinical nuclear science, mathematics, and physics. State-of-the-art facilities, including the 83,000-square-foot Lady Tabor Science Center, provide advanced research laboratories, the Rickworth Observatory, and a greenhouse. For extracurricular STEM activity, Millikan sponsors school organizations, including the Society of Physics Students, Math Club, and American Chemical Society. Dr. Aper noted, "Our students also benefit from strong partnerships between Millikan and business, industry, and 2- and 4-year colleges and universities that share our commitment to assuring outstanding experiences and learning opportunities for students. STEM fields are often seen as somewhat narrowly defined, but at Millikan we see the importance of science, math, and technology and disciplines going well beyond the traditional natural sciences and including the visual and performing arts, business, education, publishing, and more. Great College Deals is a free online resource guide for finding up-to-date advice on affording a high-quality college education. For more information, visit www.greatcollegedeals.net/rankings/small-colleges-4-STEM. That's all we have time for the Decatur Herald and Review, dated April 1st, 2016. This is Barbara Ridenour. Have a great weekend and week to follow. I look forward to reading with you again soon.